All right, ready to get into it. Today, we're diving into some seriously big ideas about, well, how the world is changing, like really changing. We're talking global power shifts. And to guide us through this whole thing, we're going deep into Kishore Mahbubani's book, The Asian 21st Century.
Yeah, and Mahbubani doesn't hold back, like, at all.
He really throws down the gauntlet, doesn't he?
Absolutely. His big claim is that Western dominance, the way we've all gotten used to the world working, it's over.
Done.
Finished. It's actually fascinating, though, because he argues that this isn't some radical new idea. He points out that for most of human history, the major players, the ones calling the shots, they weren't in the West.
Right. It was empires in the East, right?
Exactly. Think China, India, these massive civilizations with serious global clout. What we've seen for the past, say, 200 years, the West on top, that's the anomaly.
Okay, that's a pretty huge mind shift. So how do we get to this point where the West took over? And maybe more importantly, how is the East rising back to the top?
Well, Mahbubani points to a few things happening at once. First, it's not just that China and India are growing economies anymore. They're becoming economic powerhouses, like right now.
And it's been happening for a while. It's not exactly new.
That's the thing. Think back to 2001, China joins the World Trade Organization. Everyone in the West is celebrating the, quote, end of history, right?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Like, we had it all figured out.
Right, but while we were busy patting ourselves on the back, China was making a strategic play. They were positioning themselves for, well, this, global dominance.
It's true. It's like we completely missed the memo.
Yeah.
Okay, but I have to ask about this. How does COVID, I mean, the pandemic, how does that play into this whole power shift thing? Because it feels like a big deal. You know?
It's huge. Mahbubani talks about this too. He says the pandemic was like this giant global stress test. And the West, we didn't exactly pass with flying colors, did we?
Definitely not our finest hour, that's for sure. Yeah.
He argues that COVID exposed this major difference between the East and West, like a competence gap. We saw East Asian countries, China, Singapore, Vietnam, they handled the pandemic way more effectively. Lower death rates, faster economic recoveries. It was a different story.
And the results? It's hard to argue with that.
Exactly. They were prepared, they had plans, and they actually followed through, you know? While, I don't know, the West seemed to be caught totally off guard.
Yeah, it's like we were playing a different game entirely.
It wasn't just luck, though. Mahbubani digs into the reasons behind it, and it's fascinating. Strong government institutions, for one, but also this culture of meritocracy. The best and the brightest are actually making the decisions over there.
It doesn't always seem to be the case, you know, in the West, let's say.
Right, and then there's this other big thing. They invest in public goods, like, heavily. Healthcare infrastructure, that was massive during COVID.
It's like their priorities were in the right place, maybe, while we were, I don't know, worried about different things. It definitely challenges that whole idea that Western democracy is the only way to have a well-functioning government.
That's exactly the point. And it's causing a major shift in how the rest of the world sees things. Countries are looking at the East as the new model for effective leadership.
Wow, that is huge. So the West is playing catch up now.
Yeah, and that brings us to the United States, you know, the leader of the Western world order. If this power shift is the new reality, what happens to America?
Right, because we can't talk about the West without talking about the U.S.
And Mahbubani does not mince words. He says the U.S. is facing this major, major identity crisis.
An identity crisis. What does that even mean in this context?
Well, it gets at this. Can America be the world's police force, and take care of its own people at the same time? His answer, not a chance.
Wow. Okay, so that's a pretty strong statement. What makes him say that? Like, what evidence does he have?
He's looking at some pretty uncomfortable stuff happening here. A shrinking middle class, stagnant wages, just this general sense of despair, and it's worse for a lot of people. He says all this economic anxiety is fueling the anger, the division we see in America today.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to argue with, especially given, well, everything that's been happening politically.
And he says it's not about one political party or the other, it's the whole system. He says the U.S. is basically becoming a plutocracy.
A plutocracy? Isn't that like rule by the wealthy?
Exactly. It means a tiny percentage of elites. They hold all the wealth. They have all the power. And it's everyday Americans who are paying the price. Literally. Their jobs, their health, their futures, everything.
So you're saying the American dream, the idea that anyone can make it if they work hard enough, that's what, over?
Mahbubani argues that it's dying, yeah. And that the institutions we built to keep that dream alive, they're part of the problem now.
That is a really sobering thought. But it sounds like he doesn't just leave us with doom and gloom, right? There's more to it.
Right, he does offer solutions, a way forward. But that's a whole other conversation, and maybe one for another time.
Okay, so we talked about the West, especially America, and some of the challenges they're facing. But, and I think you know where I'm going with this, we can't talk about global power shifts without talking about, well, China.
The 800-pound panda in the room, right?
Exactly. So is it the big bad wolf that, you know, we in the West often make it out to be?
It's interesting because Mabubani really pushes back against that simplistic narrative.
He does.
He does. He argues that, and this is key, China isn't interested in world domination, at least not in the way we usually think about it.
So not like sending tanks and troops everywhere.
Right. They're not trying to export their ideology like, I don't know, some 20th century superpower we could name. And they're not out there starting wars.
It's true. They haven't exactly fired a shot in anger in a while.
He points this out. China hasn't fired a shot in over 40 years. Their focus, he says, is on a different kind of power.
Economic power.
Exactly. They're playing the long game and they're being really strategic about it. Building economic power through trade, for sure, but also things like the Belt and Road Initiative.
Ah, Belt and Road, yes. It's like a modern Silk Road, but supersized. Pouring trillions of dollars into infrastructure, connecting whole continents. It feels like they're rewriting the rules of global trade.
It's a bold move, that's for sure.
But is it genius, or is it, you know, some people call it a new kind of colonialism? What do you think?
It's a question a lot of people are wrestling with. On one hand, you have all these countries that are welcoming these investments. They need better infrastructure. They want in on these new trade routes. But then, yeah, there's the other side of it. The concerns about debt traps, about China using these projects to increase their political influence. It's complicated.
Really complicated.
It really is. But it definitely shows how China thinks long term and their willingness to, I don't know, step in where others haven't.
It's like they saw this need, this massive need for infrastructure in the developing world. And while, I don't know, maybe the West was busy arguing about something else, China was like, we got this.
It's definitely a different approach. And it's one that's resonating, especially in those countries that haven't traditionally benefited from, let's say, the Western way of doing things.
Right. Okay, so if we pull back from all the details for a second, what does this even mean for, like, the average person? How does this big global power shift, how does it affect me just trying to live my life?
That is the million-dollar question. And the thing is, Mabubani argues that we're moving towards a multipolar world. It's not just East versus West anymore. The old playbook, it doesn't really apply.
So it's not about picking sides. It's about figuring out what the new rules are.
Exactly. And a huge part of that is recognizing that we are all more interconnected than we've ever been. The pandemic really rammed that point home, I think.
Yeah, it's like we all got a crash course in global interconnectedness.
For sure. Supply chains, remember those?
Oh, trying to buy, like, anything during those times. It was wild.
Right. And it's not just stuff either. What happens in one part of the world, it can have ripple effects everywhere, which means we need to rethink how we deal with global problems.
So less like every country for itself.
Exactly. Mabubani says we need to strengthen things like the World Health Organization, those multilateral institutions. We have to cooperate, not just compete, if we want to tackle climate change, future pandemics, you name it.
So you're saying this multipolar world, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
He actually sees it as a huge opportunity. New markets, new partnerships, a chance to learn from each other. And it's not just about economics either. There are huge cultural implications too.
Oh, absolutely. Culture, power, economics, it's all connected.
Yeah.
What does that look like in real life though? Like, how do we even begin to navigate these cultural differences?
Well, he brings up something really interesting about trust. He argues that even with, you know, the concerns about authoritarianism in a lot of Asian countries, trust in government, trust in institutions, it's actually higher than in the West.
See, now that is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you would think, right, that in democratic societies where we have, you know, transparency, accountability, all that, you'd think we'd have more trust.
Right. But what Mabubani is saying is that the West's focus on individual rights, it's come at a cost. It's eroded this sense of collective responsibility, which I think is part of what builds trust in our institutions and in each other.
That's like that whole me versus we thing that seems to be everywhere these days.
Exactly. And meanwhile, in a lot of Asian societies, there's this emphasis on the common good, shared responsibility. That, he argues, helps build a stronger sense of trust.
Wow. That is a stark contrast. And it makes you wonder, can the West learn from that? Can we find a balance between individual freedom and, like, the well-being of the whole? It really makes you think, right, can the U.S., Can we handle a world where, well, we're not the only ones calling the shots?
And Mabubani seems to think it's not just possible, but it's necessary. For everyone, really.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't shy away from that.
He argues that this whole, I don't know what to call it, this shift in thinking away from that winner-takes-all mentality, it's the only way we're going to solve the really big problems.
The ones that don't care about borders.
Exactly. Climate change,
yeah.
Another pandemic, who knows when, resources, water, all of it. These aren't things any single country can fix, no matter how powerful they are.
It's like we've been playing this video game where the goal was to get the highest score, but now the rules have changed. Now it's like we either work together or we all lose.
I like that. It's a whole new game. And we need a new way of thinking, a new set of values even, to make it work. Mabubani talks about this, the need for a new global ethic, one that puts the well-being of everyone first.
So less America first and more Earth first, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in a way. It's about understanding that we're all connected, that cooperation, not competition, that's the only way forward that actually makes sense.
It's a pretty big ask when you think about how things have always been done.
It is.
But I have to say, maybe it's just me, but after all of this, it also feels kind of, I don't know, hopeful.
That's what I like about Mabubani's writing. He's not afraid to lay out the problems, all the ways we're messing up. But he also gives you this vision for something better, something more, I don't know.
More inclusive.
Yeah, exactly. A future where everyone has a voice, everyone matters.
A future where maybe we can finally move past this whole East versus West thing.
And embrace the fact that, yeah, it's a multipolar world with all the challenges and the potential that come with that.
And that's why I think this conversation, this whole deep dive, it's so important for everyone listening. It's not just about understanding, like, what's happening on the global stage. It's about realizing that we're not just spectators here. We have a role to play.
Absolutely.
So what are we going to do with this information? What are the conversations we need to be having, the actions we need to take? Because this is on all of us, right?
100%. Mabubani gives us the tools, the knowledge. What we do with it, that's up to us.
It really is. Well, I have to say, this deep dive has been eye-opening. Really, it makes you think about the world differently. And I hope everyone listening is feeling that same, I don't know, that same sense of urgency, but also, like we said, that sense of possibility. Because we have a chance here to do things differently.
We really do.
So on that note, Keep asking the tough questions, keep learning, and most importantly, keep fighting for that better world.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
That's it for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.